We're doing in Yaakov, and we're starting the third chapter of Tractate Shabbos. Now, remember, the in Yaakov skips much of the Gemara to get to the part that's Agadic. So the in Yaakov is now going to begin with the subject of how is one supposed to go to a public bathhouse? And we're going to see that there are a few factors involved, meaning one factor is that Chazal didn't want a person touching himself in the male organ, because that could lead him to be aroused and lead him to spill his seed. Another issue is that Chazal didn't want a person to cover his private parts, because that would look like he's embarrassed that he's circumcised. A third issue is that a person wants to be modest. A person does naturally want to cover himself. So remember, in those days, they had one bathhouse. All the men were bathing together. All the women were bathing together. There was no such thing as you had a private shower. You know, the governor might have had his own private bath. But the average person was going to the public bathhouse, including the nobles, including the people of importance. That's where people washed. So, Amar Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira tells over the following. Ani chazit el Rabbi Avu. I saw Rabbi Avu when he went to wash. Enich yadav keneged panav shel mata. I saw him covering his lower face with his hands when he went to bathe. So that certainly sounds like he kept himself modest. He put his hands, he cupped his hands over his private parts. Now, notice the terminology. Our sages discussed from a modest perspective, our sages did not want to discuss the organs, the male organ, the female organ overtly, so they had words, euphemisms. So it's called panav shalmata, the lower face. And the pubic hair is called Zakan Tachton, the lower beard. Chazal had many euphemisms when they spoke about the whole female system. So they would talk about Chadarim, different rooms, meaning they spoke about the Rechem, the womb, as one room, and they spoke about the canal as another room, and they spoke about the uterus and the uterine lining, and they had terms. They described it as though it were a complex, a housing complex, so as to be able to discuss the halacha on the one hand and not discuss in an immodest way what they were talking about. So they used euphemisms, they used nicer terminology. So here we find one of the terms that's used is panav shalmata, the lower face. Velo yadana, and I didn't know. Inaga, ilonaga. I don't know if he touched himself when he covered himself or not. Pshita denonaga. The Gemara says, what was his question? Obviously he didn't touch himself. Detanya Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer taught, if a person holds his male organ when he relieves himself, so it's as though he brings a flood to the world. Why? How so? Because one of the sins that the generation of the flood did was that they would spill their seed. And our sages say that if a person touches the male organ when they relieve themselves, then they could easily cause themselves to be aroused, and then they could cause themselves to spill their seed. So I once asked Rabbi Feinstein, you know, if there are people who always go to the bathroom, and they hold themselves. And then they learn this halacha, and they know that they're never aroused. This is what they've been doing since they were a kid. So he said, so then they have no problem. They know that they have no problem. They have no problem. Meaning if this is what they did from the time they were children, you know, they never knew this halacha. Then they come across this halacha. So for them, there's no problem. Back to the Gemara. Amar Abaye, asa'ua keboneshet. Abaye says, I'll tell you what, over here, we're not concerned that a person will be aroused. Why? They made it like the story of Rabbi Avahu is like boleshet. What is boleshet? Boleshet is when they would have battalions that were traveling, they would enter a city, and then they'd check out everything in the city. They'd take anything the city had of value. So ordinarily we say that if such a battalion pounces on a city, these were soldiers. It's like in the time of the Crusades. They went by a city. They'd go in and take everything the city had. So ordinarily we say that if you have a bottle of wine that's open or a bottle of grape juice that's open and a non-Jew walks into the room and you're not there, you have to be concerned that maybe they libated it for idol worship. Now, in order to understand this, we need some background. The Torah prohibits drinking wine or benefiting from wine that was libated for an idol. And if you take a peek at Homer's Iliad or Odyssey, you see that they were always libating wine. Like if they were going at sea and suddenly there was turbulence at sea, and they thought their boat was going to sink. So they'd start saying, oh, that's because we took a drink of wine last week and we didn't libate it in honor of Zeus. So now Zeus is getting upset at us. Quick, let's libate some wine in honor of Zeus. All they did was they'd pour out the wine, but they considered that an act of honor to the gods. They couldn't give the gods the drink of the wine, so they'd pour it out in honor of the gods. So they were very into this. Whenever they'd have an opportunity, they would do this. They'd pour wine in honor of the gods. So even if they found wine that wasn't there, that didn't belong to them, they would quickly libate it in honor of their gods. And they were very into this. And they held themselves very accountable if they didn't do this, as you see in these ancient works. So our sages said that if you have stam yain, if you buy wine and you don't know if they libated it or not, you have to assume they did. You're not allowed to benefit from it. Now, what happens if a non-Jew walks in and there are open bottles of wine and you weren't in the room? You come into the room 2 minutes later. So then you have to be concerned that they libated all the wine in honor of their gods.
Scriptures as well?
Probably, yes. That deserves a slightly broader discussion. So where's this relevant to you guys? It's relevant to you because when you'll be getting married, Bezrat Shem, or you'll have family simchas, many people have relatives who are not Jewish. It can be your cousin who's married to a non-Jew. It could be someone else in your family who's not Jewish. So you have to ensure that the wine that you bring to the table is cooked, because they would never libate cooked wine, what's called in Hebrew mivushal. Cooked wine, they would never libate. That wasn't considered good enough for them. So up until 10 years ago, you almost couldn't find in Israel wine that wasn't cooked.
In the States still, it's almost all the expensive kosher wine is mivushal.
Very expensive.
So,
it's the opposite. You have to go out of your way to find mivushal.
Right. So it changed the last 10 years. Golan Winery was purchased by a Frenchman who was very into good wines. And they decided that it's not fitting to cook the wine. It really does detract from the taste of the wine. And when they did that, it became a fad in the market. And in a decade, I remember 10 years ago, you couldn't find wine that wasn't cooked. You couldn't find it. Because I initially, before I was teaching at Mechon Meir, I would try to make Kiddush on wine that was not cooked. Because there is such an opinion that we see in Halacha, it's considered better wine. So in honor of Kiddush, I would look in the store for wine that was not cooked. Once I started teaching a Machon Meiner, I stopped doing that because we'd have guests who didn't get through the gear process. I had to have wine that was cooked at the table. But 10 years ago, I could not find wine that was not cooked. Today, you could hardly find wine that is cooked. In 10 years, the whole market switched. So when you guys make a family event, being that very often you'll have relatives who are either not Jewish or are married to people who are not Jewish, you should try to ensure that the wines and what you bring there is cooked, the wines and the grape juice.
As far as I know,
ah, okay, so I could tell you that Binyamin, where we have this problem often, is in the Psagot winery, where they do weddings, and in the Psagot winery, their wine is not cooked. They don't cook their wines.
All the weddings, or a lot of the weddings, you have people that aren't Jewish.
Right, and a lot of the weddings, you have people who are not Jewish, and that's a good question, right? Right? It's a good question. Right? So when our students went there, once I became aware of it, I recommended that they bring cooked wine. But the Psagot Winery won't let you... So the problem, where do we run into a problem? If you're pouring the cup and someone else lifts their cup against your bottle, so they've also moved the bottle. And that was considered also a form of libation in their time. So long as you can move the bottle. Anyways, when you're under the chuppah, so you have people all around. So if you keep an eye on it, fine. But very often, the bottles of wine can be waiting for you out there at the chuppah for 10 or 15 minutes. And sometimes people do move the wine and pass the wine, etc.
I just remember the weddings I went to there. The bottles are behind the bar, and they pour them. And I don't remember more than that because I didn't go to that
inn. I'm saying even the pouring is a problem because... When someone receives in their cup, they end up lifting the bottle at the end of the pouring. And if they've shifted the bottle, then halachically, they're also, again, going by what they did. What they would do is, it was enough to shift an open bottle, and they would consider that as libation to their gods. So as such, that also became prohibited.
Today, even though it's debatable about their gods and things, it's still right. It's not a resolved issue at all.
But it's not
no, it's resolved. It says in Shulchan Aruch, it's us, sir. It's resolved.
One of the things we talked about before. You may not like it, but you got to deal with it.
Yeah.
It's non-observant Jews as well, though, isn't it?
Well, usually, even a non-observant Jew has someone in their life who they wouldn't desecrate Shabbos in front of. It could be the chief rabbi of Israel. But if there's someone in their life who they would respect, so then we're more lenient. Back to the Ein Yaakov. So, that was all introductory. This whole idea of Yayin Nesech was introductory. Where do we run into the problem? If one of these battalions came into town and they started running through town, so then, do we assume that every open barrel was touched by them? Ditnan, the Mishnah says, Boleshet shenichnesa la'ir. If one of these battalions came into town, Bishat Shalom, let's say there it was peacetime, this battalion came in, and it was from your own kingdom. Chaviot p'tuchot asurot. So then we say, any open barrel, you can assume that they've accessed, even though they're peaceful soldiers, they're from your own country. But nonetheless, any open barrel is prohibited. Stumot mutarot, but closed barrels are permitted. You know they didn't access them. Bishat milchama, but at a time of war, elu velu mutarot lefi shen bnai lenasech. If it's in the middle of a war, no one has time to go libating in the middle of a war. So even the open barrels are permissible because we say they were too busy. No one had a head for it. Alma kevan debite lo menaschei. So you see, when people are scared, when people are in a rush, they don't have time to libate. Hachanami. So here too. Kevan debeit loati lirure, being that a person is in a rush, or a person is balancing himself as he's going into the river or into the bathhouse, it was tricky getting around there. No one's going to come to improper thoughts. They're not thinking about that. They're trying to manage their way into cleaning themselves. V'achamai biatuta. So the Gemara says, what are they scared of? Why over here do you say a person's scared? Biatuta dinahara. Yeah, they're scared of the river. When you're going to a river, it's not so simple to keep your balance and manage your footing. So that's why even if a person covers himself and touches himself, we're not worried that he'll come to improper thoughts, he'll come to be aroused. Ini, is that so? We have another problem. It says that anyone who covers himself, his private parts, it's as though he's denying. It's as though he's showing he's embarrassed that he's circumcised. He's embarrassed of the covenant. The Gemara says, no. The difference is, if you're on your way back to everyone, so you're facing everyone and you cover yourself, so everyone knows you're doing it out of modesty. But if you're on your way into the river and there's no one sees you, so why are you covering yourself? Because you're embarrassed. You're embarrassed you have a covenant. That's where it's improper. So if you're headed to the river where no one sees you, so then we say, if you're covering yourself, it's as though you're showing you're embarrassed of your circumcision. But if you're on your way back, where you're facing the public, so then it's okay if a person covers himself. That's part of modesty. Kiha de Rava Shachi. It says Rava would bend himself over to cover his private parts when he'd be going to the bathhouse. Rav Zeira Zakif and Rabbi Zeira, he wouldn't bend himself over because he said, I don't want anyone to think that I'm embarrassed of the fact that I'm circumcised. Rabbanan de Beravashi, Kika Nachte Zakfe, Kisalke Shalche. The disciples of the academy. Sorry. The disciples of the academy of Rav Ashi, when they'd go into the bath, so they'd stand straight, they'd say, we're not embarrassed, no one sees us. When they'd come out, they'd bend to keep their private parts covered. Rabbi Zera Havakamishtamit mit Rav Yehuda. We will end with this fantastic story that appears in a few places. We saw it already once before. Rabbi Zeira was avoiding his Rabbi Rav Yehuda. Because Rabbi Zeira wanted to make Aliyah. He wanted to go to Israel. And Rabbi Yehuda held, you're not supposed to go to Israel from Babylon. Why? Because the verse says, Shenemah Bavela Yuval V'shama Yiyu. The prophet in Jeremiah says, go to Babylon and stay there. Ad Yom Pokdi, until I call you back. So, Rabbi Zeira didn't want Rav Yehuda to ask him, what you up to? He'd have to tell him, I'm headed to Israel. And his Rabbi, Rav Yehuda, didn't hold that way. So, he didn't agree with this ruling of his Rabbi. and he was going to go with the other opinion and make Aliyah, but he wanted to learn by his Rebbe, but he didn't want him to know. So he said, Amar Ezir Vishma Milta Ve'ati Ve'isak, let me go, hear one last thing from the academy, and then I'll make Aliyah. And we'll see what he hears, what's the last thing he learns before he makes Aliyah. We'll pick up here Bezachim next week.